Everybody, and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the one, 95.1 FM, and of course, KYMN Radio, 1080 in your dial for over 50 years. Well, let's see. My guest is not here yet, but I anticipate arrival momentarily. But in the meantime, I got to tell you, I took a little trip around the east side of Northfield this morning, just checking things out and, wondering what do people do with their snow. And it is very interesting to look at the various neighborhoods and see how they get rid of the snow that they have in their driveways. And I pity those people that live on corners because they have to shovel snow one way east-west and another way south-north, I'll tell you. And one long stretch of sidewalk, I think on 7th Street, was, for blocks, people were, it looks like a snowplow went there, one of those small ones that go, that people ride, one of those little ones. And then I wondered how the businesses are handling the snow and looked at various parking lots. And I tell you, I came into a big surprise when I drove down 7th Street in Prairie. I couldn't believe how many cars were parked in the swimming pool parking lot. And so I'm going, well, obviously the swimming pool is closed. Well, there can't be anything going on inside. There's really no room for a meeting. And I swear I saw about 20 cars parked in that lot. And I'm thinking, well, maybe is it a park-and-ride situation? I have no idea, but there were a lot of cars in that parking lot this morning. And then I went and checked out my old friend Bob Will and thought, well, let's see if he needs any help shoveling. And he has his driveway clean and the sidewalk clean, so he's okay in that regard. And then I came to work, and here's the kicker on this one. The snow has not been removed from curbside. And so I thought, what am I going to do? Well, I saw a couple of cars parking the correct way, and that's diagonally on the west side of Division between 2nd and 3rd. And I thought, well, I'm going to just have to park like that. And I did. Now the effort was to get over the big hump of snow. And I started with a cup of coffee in my hands. And I got the first put in. And then I tried for the second. And then down I went. So there I am in this crunchy, hard snow trying to get up. And not spill my coffee. And it took a little while, but I finally did get my left foot planted and was going to then move my right foot in front of that. And then another movement of my left foot would get me on the sidewalk. So I made that effort, and when I did that, my prosthesis came out. It got stuck in that hard snow. So I had to sit down and put that on and got it, where I figured it's going to hold now. And And I came into the studio all full of snow. So, what? You know what? That's life. That's the way things go. The sun is shining. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. And I'm anticipating the arrival of my guest. I'll give her a call and see if we had a misunderstanding in our text messaging and emailing. And in the meantime, I'm going to play a selection of music, and the music is going to be from the year 1983, and the song I'm going to play was number 9 in 1983. Where were you? Number 9, and it was featured, one of them was featured on the Grammy Awards the other night. So let's go with the number 9 song in 1983. You might want to sing along. Singing along to that one, Island in the Sun, Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton, Islands in the Stream, excuse me, the sun's in my eye right now. That was number 9 in all of 1983, and I remember a lady here in town. This is back when karaoke, however you say it, was getting a whole people. It was very popular. And this lady in town asked me if I would sing Islands in the Stream with her. And I thought, wait a minute, this woman's talented, and there's harmony and all that. No, thank you. Won't do it. So I stuck to my 16 tons. Well, Dina Fessler, my guest, is here live and in color. And Dina, thank you for coming in. And normally you walk in about a minute to nine, and today it came in about 9:07. Now, that's tardy.
Explain those missing
what happened?
8 minutes. Well, nothing revolutionary, but just trying to get out of the driveway. Just getting out of the driveway. Yeah, it's amazing, like, how many no school days or whatever they're called. They're snow days, they're cold days. And anyway, but ordinarily it doesn't really make any difference to us because our kids do online school. So while all the other Northfield kids were hanging out, you know, playing video games and watching TV all week, my kids have to keep studying. But anyway, so but today I'm like, oh yeah, I woke up at about 5:30, my eyes sprung open, and I thought, and my husband, the main snow shoveler guy,
Brad,
he's gone. And so at about 5:30, my eyes popped open, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to get out there and start plowing, or I'll never get here. So anyway, it was an interesting combination of the little, you know, that push plow thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that, but it was so drifty. I mean, there was some, you know, 2 foot plus drifts, and the thing doesn't really handle that.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a combination of that and a shovel. And I thought, I just have to get this little path that I can get the car through and leave the rest. So,
you know, it's interesting that you say that, because while I was waiting for you, I talked about taking a tour of Northfield's East Side and checking out how people are doing their sidewalks and their driveways. And what's really funny is some of the driveways, the car is still up by the garage,
mm-hmm.
and you can tell they cut enough, just enough,
yeah.
to get the car out.
Yep, it's like threading a needle.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, well, you know, you turn your wheel, you're going to get...
Yeah, I know.
So then I had the mystery, and I have no idea what it is, but you know the Northfield, you allow your kids go swimming at the Northfield swimming pool?
In the summer.
Yeah. Well, I drove by there today, and there was at least 20 cars parked there. Well, you know,
what some people let their kids swim all year, or what are they doing?
Well, the building's too small to have 20 people in a meeting.
Right.
You know, it's all showers and stuff. I have no idea.
Maybe they were skateboarding.
Well, you know, another thing, though, I thought, maybe, just came to mind, maybe because the city plowed that lot, the people that didn't have their driveways plowed may have parked there and walked home until they could clear their driveways this morning.
Interesting theory. Yeah, let's look into that.
Okay, I'm looking. Boy, that sun's nice, isn't
it? I know. It actually feels great. And even while I was out, wearing all my layers and my scarf wrapped around my face, and I'm just one of those glamorous Minnesota people on a snowy day. I loved it, you know, because the sun started coming up, and it's so pretty, and it feels like we're heading into spring. It's got that feel, even though there's, you know, 2+ snowdrifts, 2 feet snowdrifts in my driveway. I feel like we're on the way into spring, so
yep.
I'm in a good mood.
We're more than halfway there. And did you come, did you, you know, today is, this week is Be Kind Week.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, for Valentine's Day?
No, it's just is the week, well, Valentine's Day, but we just got done, Jeff just got done talking to a couple people, and it's Be Kind to Everybody Week, or Random Act of Kindness is what they call it.
Okay.
So
lucky,
how do you like the random act of that I did for you?
Well, okay, there's a box of donuts here, but
yep.
half of them are gone. So did you eat those in the 8 minutes that I was late?
No, I shared them with some people I was meeting with this morning.
You're just being kind to everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, I think that's a very nice thing. I mean, my little question in the back of my head is like, it's only a week. Couldn't we have a whole month of kindness?
Yeah, we could. I told her.
We don't want to push it or anything. We don't want to go crazy.
I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I went to pay. I was going through a drive-through food place, and I went to pay it, and they said, the person ahead of you already paid for it.
Oh, how nice.
Oh, I just got a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, and I thought, well, that's nice.
Yeah.
So I drove up to the next window and got my coffee, and as that person was pulling away, I waved my hand out the door, and they waved.
Yeah.
And off they went, and off I went, and I thought, that was really nice.
What
a surprise.
Yeah.
I have a lesson to teach you.
Teach it.
Do that sometime, but don't pick a van that's behind you.
Why?
You don't know how many people are in there.
Oh, well, yeah, it's for everybody. And like, well, do they just leave their credit card or something? And
No. When I pulled up, I says, I'll take care of the van behind me.
Okay.
And
but how do you know? Like, you have to drive back around and say, what do they owe? Or
No. They already know it when you drive up. They know what you owe them, and they know what the guy behind.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll take care of the guy behind me.
I forgot. They got all those headphones. They know. Okay.
And then I... then they said that'll be $17.86.
School bus full of kids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but think of all that kindness. That kindness is karma, kindness, and it all.
Well, it just shocked
around.
Me. You know, I mean, I thought there was, you know, maybe the driver.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have kind of a funny story, and we can plug our friends.
Is it funnier than yesterday?
Funnier tattoo? Than yesterday? Oh, the tattoo story.
Yeah.
It's not that funny. That's pretty funny.
And by the way, we're going to be serious today.
Okay.
Dina Fessler. You can tell that funny thing. But for those of you that tuned in yesterday, Dina and I just talked about anything and everything. And then I said, the reason I wanted to talk to you is about your latest travels to, that one nation over there. And it's in Africa and it's Somalia.
You're narrowing it down, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I want to hear about that. Mm-hmm. But go ahead with your funny
story.
Oh,
well, it's not hilariously funny, but it's topical of what you're saying, this kindness and taking care of people. And so I was at the Hideaway, the place that we get those, you know, giant dinner plate-sized cinnamon rolls that I'm still dreaming about.
Where's that?
The Hideaway.
The Hideaway,
yeah. And anyway, so I snuck in there for, I don't know, it's just, I think I was waiting for my kids to finish doing something. And I'm like, I'm going to run in and grab a cup of coffee and maybe a little piece of cake or a little dessert or something. And so I order it. And as I'm about to pay, I look in my purse and I can't find my wallet. I'm like, oh, shoot, you know, and it's, you kind of panic on 100 levels when you're missing your wallet
because
it's not just that you don't have like $5 to pay for your cake. And I'm like, I don't know where I left it. And okay, I'm like instantly trying to quickly play back, you know, where was I? Where did I put it? You know, was it stolen? Did I leave it somewhere? What's in it? Blah, blah, blah. And anyway, this woman is standing in line behind me and she's like, oh, I'll take care of it. I'll buy your cake and coffee for you. And so the cashier is ringing her up. She's paying for it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you don't understand. Like, I gotta go. I gotta go run out the door. And she's like, oh no, it's really fine. Like, I want you to just enjoy the cake and the coffee. And I'm like, you're so sweet. And then meanwhile, the woman behind the counter is getting it all served up. I'm like, no. Please stop. I'm running out your door. I can't. And so the woman by the counter, would you like a box or, you know, to go? I'm like, I'll come back later. So I just had to go flying out. And sure enough, I went back to the library. I'd left it on a chair. And so I'm kind of embarrassed because, and as I'm running out the door, you know, there's the Hideaway is always crowded. So people are kind of watching me. And I'm like, you're so sweet, though. And I'm just kind of yelling that out. Anyway, but you know what? I went back an hour later and I took my free cake and coffee.
Oh, she did pay for it.
She did. It was all there. And and the woman working there, she's like, well, I wasn't sure what to do with it. You know, it's now owned by somebody. So I got it.
Okay.
I had my cake and I ate it too.
Oh, that's interesting. were you telling me, sorry, to work up to that line?
No, I'm just that quick. Because yeah. I got up at 5:30 to shovel.
You're not quick. You were 7 minutes late.
but shoveling since early this morning, I'm on top of my game.
Are you a person that has time discipline? Do you have to be someplace at a certain time all the time?
No, that's the thing. This is kind of as we are in the we have a lot of stuff going on with the kids, but the online school thing, it is so slick that we don't have to be, like, for the most part in our days, getting up in the morning. I don't go anywhere. The girls walk across to the carriage house, and then they head upstairs, and they're at school, and that's it. So,
now, on a day like today, they're doing it themselves.
Yeah, they're old enough, and they self-manage. Almost constantly.
Because they have certain assignments they have to have done and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they're in classes right now. Yeah. They got their little headphones on just like we do, and except they're watching the teachers on the screens and stuff.
And it's pretty nice to be able to trust kids that are 12 and 13, I believe.
Yeah, well, they're 13, 14, and 15 now, they're very and they're responsible kids.
The names of the children.
You ready?
Sunny.
Mm-hmm.
Chocolate.
Coco.
Coco. Okay. At least I got in the right area, right? Sunny, Coco.
But not that kind of cocoa. It's not like the chocolate cocoa. It's just like COCO.
Yeah, Coco.
Like Coco Chanel.
Like Coco Puffs.
I think Coco Puffs has an A on the end, COCOA, like that's the chocolate version.
You think so? I don't think so. Maybe I'm thinking of Choo Choo. But anyhow, what's the other name?
Daisy,
dang it.
Yeah.
Now, this morning, as I was getting ready to leave for this meeting, I'm thinking, I got to remember those kids' names.
And you've done a fine job.
And Sunny is the only one that I seem to always remember. Well, and it isn't, by the way, I wouldn't know which one is
you
Sunny.
You don't know which one is Sunny.
Yeah, well, when they're here, you know, I get it. But if they walked in right now, I think the tallest one would be Sunny.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Sunny is now at least famous in our house, because when she was here talking to you, you played the Sunny. I can't remember the artist.
Yep.
Blanking on that.
Okay.
Anyway, Sunny,
yep.
You know. And they have this Alexa in their bedroom.
What?
Alexa.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so she'll just be in the bedroom, and she'll say, Alexa, play Sunny. And the music lights up, and the other girls kind of roll their eyes and laugh a little bit and stuff. So she kind of feels special.
Well, couldn't the other one do, one of them do, shimmy, shimmy, Coco Pop, shimmy, shimmy, Pop.
Yeah, all right. We'll have to.
Yeah.
So we got introduce
Coco. Sunny, and then Daisy.
Daisy,
tiptoe through the daisies.
Or, no, give me your answer, do.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Crazy in love with you.
Love for you, something like that.
Big plans on Valentine's Day?
I'm kind of a stag at
this week. Got mine planned out.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm just a housewife managing the kids while my husband's out of town. That's pretty exciting.
I went down to Fair Family Foods or Family Fair, whatever it's called, and I ordered fresh crab legs. My wife loves crab legs.
They sell them there at the top?
Oh, yeah. They have a fresh meat counter.
Oh,
I mean, they have butchers. They actually, you literally can go in there and say, give me a steak this thick. Or give me a.
I haven't really shopped the new store.
Oh, their deli and their meat department's fantastic.
Love crab.
Finally.
Crab legs. That's what we had for our Christmas Eve dinner.
I got king crab.
Yeah, love it.
And
awesome.
He told me that you boil them
till
they're hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then he says he puts them on a pan and puts them in the oven at about 250 for about 4 or 5 minutes to dry the water.
So when you eat them, they're just not that sloppy. Yeah, right.
What goes with crab legs, by the way?
Okay.
I was thinking asparagus.
I will tell you, that was our Christmas Eve menu, which we hadn't done crab legs.
Is that the way to do them, cook them?
I hadn't known about put them in the oven to dry them up a little bit. That's a good idea. And I don't know if Family Fair sells it, but you can get it at a Cub, because you've got to get crackers. You know, you want to get those squeezy things to crack the legs, and then they have like these long skinny forks to pull out, and then you can have some warming dishes for your butter with a candle. You kind of need to make it
Valentine-y.
Well, you know, to get in, this is, I learned this a different time. If you don't have those things, it can be a very, very long, long dinner because you have to like take scissors and hammer your way through.
A nutcracker will work.
Well, it depends. You know, a nutcracker usually works, but you want to get those the thing to like scoop the stuff out.
Oh, yeah.
And you
I'm not going to do that.
Okay, well, you can have your wife help you with all the... She can I
won't eat any.
Here's what we had with it, though.
Because she loves them so much. And
Wait, you're not even going to eat it?
No, I'll prepare it and make something else.
Oh,
but,
really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, they're not cheap. I am.
I guess that's an interesting way to look at it. It's like if you loved your sweetheart so much on Valentine's Day that you would buy an expensive meal that only she could eat and you would just prepare it and watch her. Mm-hmm. Would she be happy eating alone, though?
No, I'll make something for myself.
You'll just have a little peanut butter sandwich on
the
side. I get you. Well, here's what we did with it. Okay. And we did sweet potato fries. Which is kind of a fun recipe.
And you know, I thought I invented those 20 more years ago.
Really?
Yeah, I sliced them up and fried them, and they're like delicious chips. And I did that when my daughter, who's now in her 40s, was 10.
Yeah.
And I thought I was the only one with that idea.
Well, look how the world copied you.
Yeah, well, back then there was no such thing.
Yeah, I've only heard of the sweet potato french fry. Yeah, in the last decade. So,
it cost extra.
And now those, according to my recipe, of the best way to do it is, you not only bake it, but you roll them, kind of coat them in cornstarch first. Yeah, cornstarch or baking powder, cornstarch. One of the two, because it gets the extra crispy. Okay, and then we did a corn salsa. So like corn, green onion, and some like a little vinaigrette in there. So you've got kind of a vegetable. And I think we did Brussels sprouts too, which was a little strange, but we just thought that would be fun. So there's your menu if you want to.
Well, I like Brussels sprouts. There's no doubt about it. I didn't when I was a kid.
Nobody does.
Matter of fact, for dinner last night, I had cabbage, boiled or steamed cabbage. Mm-hmm. With brown sugar and butter and bologna or kiel pasta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's good, it's fast, and it's inexpensive.
And it's kind of nice on a winter, you know, it's a cozy.
But then I splurged and I got one of the desserts that they have at the deli, and it's kind of like a vanilla pudding but thicker and tastier. With big cherries in them and cherry juice. Oh.
Where? What?
At Food Fair.
Let's just all go there right now. It sounds like,
I pass up, what's that other, Aldi's. I pass up Aldi's and Cubs.
I haven't been there either.
To go to, come downtown from where I'm at.
Okay. Wow. Because I usually go to Cub and to Just Foods.
Too big.
Co-op.
Too big.
It does.
And Just Food Co-ops. I forgot. I will shop there.
I like that place. But I like what I like about Cub is they have everything. I mean, like, because some of my recipes, I'll be looking for some kind of weird things, and they always have whatever it is.
It's 9:31, and you're making me hungry. And let me tell you a place to go if you're hungry. You know where?
Quarterback Club?
That's right.
Let's go there.
Okay. They've got those great flame broiled burgers. They are so good, and they have a special on like five different, you know, with Swiss cheese and mushrooms and they just whatever you want. There's seven different choices,
and they make their own donuts.
And they very right. And also, you get a large order of fries and a large drink, all for $7.22 for lunch. Mm-hmm. They're open for breakfast for another 28 minutes. That's the Quarterback Club, and remember, in honor of their morning crew, which have been there for more than 40 years, who are now on vacation, they're opening for breakfast at 7 o'clock, and they'll reopen at 6 o'clock when they get back looking nice and tan. So just nice. Pass that word along. Well, at 9:32 on 1080 Radio, we'll take a brief break here. And then one of my favorite guests, Dina Fessler, and I are going to talk about her most recent trip. And the story is all available online, but I'm going to just ask questions here as soon as the sun will allow me to find the arrow on the computer. And there it is.
Here's to the defiant ones, the roughnecks and rogues, who refuse to live by the laws of physics. And here's to the renegades who go 0 to 60 in 4.4 seconds, but wish they were doing it in 3. Introducing the 2018 Can-Am Maverick X3, with 172 horsepower, 24-inch of suspension travel, and an aggressive 72-inch stance. It's tailor-made for anyone looking to give gravity the bird. Head to Leo South in Lakeville to unleash your inner Maverick today.
The affordable one, the one you want at Leo South.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
Hi, I'm Kathy Olson.
Kathy, we'll get back to you in a minute here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. And we have a little background music. Name that tune if you can.
Billie Jean by Michael Jackson.
1983. Where were you?
I was dancing with my red leather jacket and my sparkly glove. Probably at a college party.
You know what I watch? You know, I maybe people may say I watch too much television, but I don't watch television. I watch the wild shows, the Second World War, the Vietnam War shows, and
it's like documentaries. And
yeah,
educational.
And
that's not watching TV. That's education.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
So, I watched something about Studio 54. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Well, I remember of it. I was a young, kind of a young, early teen.
Yeah.
But you'd hear stuff, and that was where all the cool people were hanging out and all the drugged out celebrities. And pretty
now,
pretty
how
wild
far
teams.
Was that from the fashion places where you worked?
Well, Studio 54 was on 54th Street.
Yeah.
So, and I think it was on the west side? And the garment industry is kind of between 38th and 42nd.
Okay.
So it's
not exactly
not
in
really
the neighborhood.
Exactly in the neighborhood.
I'm just wondering if you I didn't know the history of it. I just knew it was the place to be seen by, anybody.
Yeah.
And they want to come up with pictures of different politicians nowadays.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see who was in
who
there
was
and
there.
Stoned and all that.
Oh, yeah.
But they ended up in jail, the founders of that.
For what?
Fraud.
Really?
Yeah, they were keeping more than half the cash. And a smart lawyer says, you don't take 50% of the cash, you take 10%.
Well, that's the you live fast and hard, I guess, at the in the druggy
and
disco scene.
One of the partners, or two of them, died of AIDS,
mm-hmm.
and the other one went on. They both actually went on after they got out of prison, and developed boutique hotels. And very successful.
New concept for a new...
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, now I'm kind of curious to see your documentary. Is it PBS
I think it might have been on the History Channel. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But anyhow, what surprised me was the sound effects and lighting effects that they had, and the just stuff that they had in the club,
mm-hmm.
and the balcony that would roll out if they wanted to and could see 250 people to watch the people on the dance floor.
Wow.
And they introduced cultures, black, white, gay, straight.
Yeah.
And they mixed those cultures in there, and it looked like everybody was having a good time.
Yeah, that's I think it's that whole period of the 70s is kind of interesting. You know, as the kids, they're studying American history as kids do, and my job as their coach with the online schools, I have to look over everything that they do. You know, I don't sit in the class, but I have to be
aware
of everything, just so that if they're struggling or have questions, right, just sort of know what's going on. Anyway, they're kind of slowly creeping up to that era, but right now they're still in the World War II, you know, but you're seeing like how all this new technology and the whole culture shifts, and not just with the war, but with, you know, the concept of women's roles, and women aren't, you know, like that whole Rosie the Riveter, and women helped with the war effort, and then when it's settled down in the 50s, they had about one decade where they're going to be compliant. The women, you know, where they're kind of back to the kitchen and life is very sedate, but like underneath it was actually brewing this feminist revolution coming up that's going to come in the 60s. And when birth control became invented as a thing, like the pill, how that is sort of one of the big turning points for women and doing whatever they, you know, want to do, and they're kind of breaking out. And then it led into this, you know, so I'm waiting for wondering, like, by the time the kids get to studying the 70s, like, what's, how much education do they get? But they're learning a lot. It really is important that the whole disco scene was kind of this new frontier of not caring, you know, not, you know, just not following all the social norms and challenging everything. And it's interesting how each decade has its own new version of identity. Remember we talked about identity in coffee shops and why people do what they do and stuff. So I think it's interesting.
One of the things that they showed in reference to disco, a fellow by the name of Steve Dahl was a disc jockey in Chicago. And I don't know if it was at the White Sox or the Cubs baseball game. He promoted blowing up disco music. And so they made a big deal out of it. And he
blowing up the
records.
Burning books, but blowing up disco albums.
Right.
Okay.
And went over really big. And it turns out that Steve Dahl is a first cousin to the people that know Jeff Dahl and Rick Dahl and Craig Dahl, remember I told you about the Dahl house the other day?
Oh,
it was one of the stores.
Oh, yeah.
A very prominent family in the community.
So the disco hater is a relative of theirs?
Yeah, the first cousins.
Wow.
And he told me about it before I knew about it in the news.
I mean, like when he's blowing up, or, I mean, you know, blowing up these albums. My first question is, you know, how many? Does he have a huge, huge pile, and is rigging dynamite? And is it like a theatrical thing? Did he get a lot of spectators? Or was it just one crazy guy in a street corner?
No, it was in the ball field. And the ball field was full of people.
Okay, so it's a full stadium. And
I don't know if it was before or after. It was more than likely after a game. And then the film I saw, it looked like they were stacked.
Okay.
Not one on top of the other, but with space in between them.
Okay.
And then maybe firecrackers or whatever. And so when they lit one wick, it went and boom, 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 boom,
okay,
boom, all
so
the way
up.
That's
kind of fun. He's got a plan. Okay. Well, so it's was the crowd supportive of this?
Oh, yeah.
They were all like, boo, disco's bad, disco's bad.
Yeah.
You know, we thought Elvis was bad. This is worse.
Yeah, well, okay. I don't know. I kind of like the Eagles, and I like the Gibb brothers. And
yeah.
I kind of like that music. I mean, it all sounded alike, but I liked the beat.
Well, you know, now that's another question. It's like, you know, how many people liked Elvis's music, but they just didn't approve of the way he danced?
Well, I was
like two different things.
I was in the eighth grade when Elvis came out. And my the adults that, you know, like, that isn't music. you know, because, of course, they were a big band and all that. But for the, I was a kid, we thought it was terrific. We thought it was great, fun to dance to. It didn't make sense, though, when you say, you ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Well, now, you could pick apart a lot of lyrics in old folk tunes that don't make a lot of sense either.
You ain't nothing but a hound dog, just a...
crying all the time.
I think the best song by Elvis Presley at that era was Heartbreak Hotel. Down at the end of Lonely Street in Heartbreak Hotel.
That song is really genius because the whole rhythm of it is... you know, got the whole package. Yeah. Well, okay, so
let's
now
take a break.
Have to talk about rap music next? Or?
I got a story. I have a story. And before I take the break, I'll tell it to you.
Is it a funny story? Is it funnier than my tattoo story?
Well,
we're going to use that as the benchmark of all stories now.
There was, I used to cover the Minnesota Vikings, and I had them on my show every day and by phone. And there was an offensive lineman named Boo Boo. What the heck is his last name? Anyhow, during my interview, in our conversation, he kept and he said that he likes rap music. Mm-hmm. So, what's that? He said, well, you got to hear it. It's rhythm and rhyme. And I says, well, just a second. I've had all these albums at my foot in a bin. I said, well, let me pull some out. And I pulled out like Duane Eddy and Detour or Glenn Miller and Chattanooga Choo Choo or whatever. And he just said, no, that isn't
That's
it.
Not
That's
it.
Not it. No, nope, I can't do it. Roos, I think his last name was. The bottom line is I had never, ever heard of rap. I mean, this was way before rap was, you know, they were doing doing it. And I just can't imagine how stupid he must have thought of me, like, well, this guy doesn't, you know, Glenn Miller with rap.
Yeah.
Well, let's take that break and enjoy the sun as it's a beautiful morning at 16 minutes before it is 10 o'clock on this Wednesday the 13th.
Hi, I'm Kathy Olson. Navigating the unfamiliar land of senior care can be daunting. We're here for you. Millstrom Commons offers the care and services you need and the independence you want. Renting one of our assisted living apartments provides you with 3 meals a day, served restaurant style in our dining room, weekly housekeeping, and the option of adding personal supportive services as you need them. Our staff's on duty 24/7 to provide that much needed peace of mind. If you're searching for options, give me a call. I'm here for you.
Well, thank you, Kathy. Glad to hear that here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. Let's see if our friend in the studio can name this tune.
Oh, Total Eclipse of the Heart by that woman.
Mm-hmm.
She won, like, so many awards for this. Turn Around, Bright Eyes.
I'll give you a hint. Who's
Sunny?
Singing it?
Huh? Coco? Daisy?
No. Da 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 da. What's you know that?
Well, it's Heart. No, it's not Heart. It's a woman. Taylor Swift did this. Can I say Taylor Swift? No, it's not her.
No, it's I gave you the hint.
But it's totally Eclipse of the Heart.
Yes. The hint was, my Bonnie lies over the ocean.
Bonnie.
As in James. Glenn.
Miller.
Teller. Taylor.
Bonnie Taylor? No, it's not Bonnie Taylor.
Bonnie Tyler.
Tyler, yeah, that's it. Bonnie Tyler.
All right. You were a kid in that one with a red jacket. Okay, you want to get serious?
Let's.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, the reason I invited Dean to come in is she is a young woman that done a lot of great things for education in regards to women in particular in foreign countries, Afghanistan, India, Somalia, and probably places I'm not aware of. But when you mentioned that you were on a mission of sort, not a Christian thing or religious thing, but on a mission to help young ladies in particular, I would say, in Somalia get an education and have some self-esteem. Some of these countries look at women like they're something to use. And you said Somalia, and I'm going, oh, my God, of all the places to go. And you explained to us yesterday that you were in the northwestern part of Somalia, and therefore not along the Gold Coast where piracy and slavery and all that takes place. So where did you go and what did you do and why did you go to Somalia and how do you have your connections? How's that for having read your blog?
Yeah, nice job. Thank you. Okay, we have to start out by saying thanks for always introducing me as this young woman. Just,
well, comparatively speaking.
That's why I'll come back all the time. Nobody else says that. Okay, so where shall I start? I mean,
How did you find out about
Somalia?
Why was I there?
I mean, like,
well, you know, you're sitting around the house and all of a sudden, huh, I think I'll go to Somalia.
Right, what, it seems a little...
Did you see something, hear something, read something?
If we, we'll just sort of, I'll start from the beginning, but not the whole long drawn out. But the very, very, very beginning of why I would ever be there. It goes back to before I started the nonprofit, the Children's Culture Connection, and way back. And I guess I've always had this idea in my mind, this theory in my mind, I guess, in a way, which is that young people, not just girls and boys, it's not just this cliche that they're the future and we must nurture them. I mean, but it really is true. And I mean that on all fronts. Whether they are kids in America, they need a lot of nurturing, but kids in other countries, obviously. But there are a lot of places in this world where people don't really even think of them as a place, sort of like Somaliland. It's just a source of negative statistics, and Afghanistan, and not even, I mean, India, everybody knows India exists, but the places that I go are the places where people forget that there's kids growing up in these huge slums. And these kids are extremely important, and not just because, you know, we love all children and like that. But I mean, I really mean that they are as influential. These invisible kids are growing up in these invisible spaces in the world, sometimes right under our noses, sometimes half a continent or hemisphere away. But they are... What happens in their development and their upbringing is going to impact the world. So it's not just nurturing the educated kids and getting them into all the AP classes and grooming them for college. That's one way we look at nurturing children. But you take these kids in these world's invisible spaces where they are impacted by poverty, gender oppression, war, you know, disease, all kinds of things. And what happens to them as they grow up, it's not nothing. You know, these are the kids that will grow up and they will be the core of, well, another cycle of poverty. But with that comes overpopulation. That comes where you know where the terror cells start from, and they go after kids who have nothing to do. And they don't have an education, so they're very easy to manipulate. You can tell them anything, and they can't question it because they're undereducated. You want to talk about where do these refugees spring from? Unstable places where the people growing up there are, if you're in a failed state and you're a young person growing up and that's all that exists there, you're going to be a contributor to this. And you can also go on an environmental level. A lot of these... I haven't been into one impoverished place where if they don't have an infrastructure, they don't have anywhere to put trash. And so the same place that is overpopulating because there's so many of them and they don't have jobs and they don't have education, and the trash goes into the ocean. And people can say, well, at least it's not affecting me. Well, that's hilarious. Now in this day and age, we're saying, oh, wait a second. There isn't... kind of a little off the track here, but I read this study, which you can read them all the time. Every day in the news is some new ocean statistic of microplastics and straws, and it just makes your head hurt. But they did a study of sea turtles, and they went to all the different oceans in the on the entire planet where sea turtles are, and they were going to do a study on how many of them in these different regions had plastic in their system. And the percentage was quite interesting. It was all of them. I mean, there isn't any place really in any part of this ocean that isn't touched by this in some level. And so, you know, kind of coming back to...
When you say in them, are you talking about on them or in them?
In. I mean, like, they're ingesting, you know. I mean, it's not because... I'm kind of like getting off on a little plastic tangent here, but I think it's very important to think about like how all this is really interconnected. Is that what they've discovered is that back in the 60s and the 70s when the big plastic industry was getting started and it's this, you know, product of the future, they didn't know how it operated. They didn't know how it broke down. They didn't know that it didn't break down, except when it's in the ocean long enough, it actually does break down and into microplastics. So it's not like you can just go and scoop up all the, you know, shampoo bottles that got chucked in there, because they actually start breaking down, and now it's in, you couldn't even catch it with a sieve, and it's down on the ocean floor. And so all the ecosystem is involved in it in some way, whether they're ingesting it, like, you know, like even the whales, when they're eating the fish, they open their mouths and all this water goes through them. All of this plastic is going through them. The fish that are born actually have plastic in them now. So people are finding that studying the fish that we're eating now is got plastic in them from birth. Okay, so all of these things that were never thought of back, and we're kind of talking about what was the world like and this freedom, and people have this freedom, and, you know, wars are kind of, especially in the 70s, and everybody's partying at Studio 54 and having all their, you know, kind of new existential moment of who am I? And they're not thinking as we're becoming consumers, and as Americans we're consuming. And nobody's ever really thinking about 30, 40, 50 years into the future. And now they are. Anyway, it's a complicated issue, which I'm not going to like go further on that. But back to how kids are growing up around this planet affects everybody very quickly now.
I want to hear more about that in just a moment. Here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on, we'll take a brief break and we'll be back with our guest, Dina Fessler.
Be her hero this Valentine's Day with a gift from Russell Stover Chocolates. They specialize in fresh strawberries, hand-dipped in luscious chocolate, and packaged in beautiful red heart boxes. Russell Stover chocolate-covered strawberries are the most romantic Valentine's Day gift you can give. At Russell Stover, there are special gifts for every budget. Many gifts are buy two, get one free. Two for her, one for you. Choose Russell Stover Chocolates.
Hi, I'm Angie Taylor, Director of Life Enrichment at Three Links Care Center in Northfield. We offer daily activities at each of our facilities, including independent senior living, assisted living, care center, and memory care. The activities range from exercise classes to sing-alongs, games to gardening, from bus rides in the countryside to painting fine art. Activities are personalized for the individual. Please call Three Links at 664-8800 or find out more at threelinks.org.
''83, number 7.
Men Down Under.
That is correct.
That Australian band.
Yes.
Is that what they're called? Men Down Under.
The name of their song is Down Under.
Yeah.
And the name of the group is Men at...
Men at Work.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Glow and men for love.
All right, let's quit dancing and get back to the serious stuff here. We only have 4 minutes before 10 o'clock, so we're going to get into all about your trips to India and Somali. And right now we're talking about children in need in every country.
Yeah, we're kind of backing it up on, and not just children in need, because in the traditional sense. In the traditional sense, children in need, you know, kind of comes off to be like, you know, poor children, hungry children, which, yes, that exists. But to me, the children that are in need are American children that are, I don't know, throwing a plastic shampoo bottle into the garbage right now and assuming that it's all going to work out. Like, the children in need are children that have just a large capacity of power that they may not really understand. And that's Americans, for sure. American kids growing up don't understand that. They don't understand that the decisions that we make, whether it's what we buy, how the things that we consume, how we drive our cars, how we do everything we do. And I don't mean just environmental. I like the things that we purchase, too, support industries. They support, you know, they support all kinds of things. Well, and they need to know that.
I got, because it's 2 minutes almost to 10 o'clock, I got to ask you a question. On the news, a young woman, a freshman at the University of Minnesota, so you know she probably was 18, 19 mm-hmm. years old, was attended a rally where they wanted to get the people and the university, along with the Coke machine and the ATM machine, a birth control machine that would sell prophylactics, is that how you said? And the pill after, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Morning after pill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there was one other kind that they mentioned that was birth control.
Okay.
And they want them available in vending machines next to the Coke machine.
That's an interesting, you know, that's a... we could spend 2 hours on that easily.
You know, my first blush was, I wonder what the parents and the grandparents of this 18-year-old girl mm-hmm. who wants to have contraceptives available to her 24/7 mm-hmm. in that Kaufman
Union.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she's very pretty. And she's talking to a reporter, and I thought, boy, that takes a lot of guts to go up there at 18 years old and say, well, you never know when you're going to need one of those. And
I mean, it's true. There's, I think that this has been sort of a thing. I don't know how to explain it. Like easier access for young people has been to get contraception has been kind of around. I mean, I don't know if you can quite go to the school nurse yet for this, but it is something where kind of communities that consider themselves sort of responsibly progressive communities are trying to let these kids know, like, hey, we can't stop nature. We can't. You can lecture them and you can drag them into church all you want to, but at the end of
just
the day,
say no.
In every generation, kids are going to do what kids are going to do. So there is this, you know, I think it's interesting, like, up to the venue. Well, I know, I bet you can go to the Contented Cow, and in the bathrooms there, they sell all that stuff.
Well, I have to tell you
how. I mean, that's people that are usually 21.
Yeah.
But
here's how old I am, by the way. I used to be a soda jerk. You know what that is?
Yes, I do.
Okay. At a drugstore mm-hmm. on Arcade and 7th Street in St. Paul, and if somebody wanted to, you can pull that shade during the news.
Okay.
When somebody wanted a prophylactic, they called them then, a condom, I could not sell them. You know, I sold gum and everything else besides being a soda jerk. Mm-hmm. You had to go to the pharmacist, and he had them in a locked box, and you had to, you know, be over whatever, 21. To buy them.
So now, I mean, like, talking about bravery, it seems like the person who would go to that to get the pharmacist to open the lockbox, that seems braver than the girl who's trying to get a vending machine at Kaufman Union, right? And the whole town's talking about you now.
Well, let's take a break for the news.
Okay.
As Wayne snorted. This is the one, 95.1 FM, KYMN 1080 AM radio from Northfield, Minnesota. We are going to take a brief look at the news here and play catch up on what's happening. We'll be right back.
Minnesota News Network, I'm Tasha Radel. Democrats who control the Minnesota House and Republicans who run the Senate apparently agree the state should continue kicking in money to hold down increases in health insurance premiums.
HMOs are pushing for an extension of what's called reinsurance. Redwood Falls Republican Senator Gary Dames says Minnesota used to have its own program to cover people with serious medical conditions, which kept the insurance market stable.
And then the ACA came along and blew that all up. And now we're still trying to keep insurance rates somewhat in check.
But Senator Jeff Hayden, Democrat from Minneapolis, warns fellow lawmakers.
We don't have any real discussion today other than what we had a couple of years ago on what we're actually going to do to help folks that are on the individual market.
Bill Werner at the Capitol.
The Minneapolis Police Department and FBI have a man in custody accused in the 1993 murder of Jeanne Ann Childs in her South Minneapolis apartment. Officers say the suspect was arrested in Wake Park for probable cause murder following a multi-year investigation. Cold case investigators say forensic technology, DNA testing, and a genealogy website help identify the unknown DNA left at the crime scene. Police have not yet identified the suspect, but did say he was a businessman from Isanti County. Several communities in Minnesota have already passed local Tobacco 21 ordinances, and a bill that would raise the legal tobacco age statewide is making its way through the legislature. State Representative Lori Halverson of Eagan says the makers of e-cigs and other vaping products continue to prey on our youth. A National Guard recruiter is facing third-degree criminal sexual conduct charges for alleged contact with a minor at the Bemidji Armory. 33-year-old Ryan Rivers is accused of performing sex acts on a 17-year-old girl. This is MNN.
To the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is the 195.1 FM, and of course, for over 50 years, 1080 on your AM dial, broadcasting live from our studios in downtown Northfield on Division Street, right across from the Public Library and at the intersection of 2nd. This building was the very first, the very first medical arts building. There we go. Got it. Dr. Kuchera, Stan Kuchera, however you want to say it, put this together, this building, which is now part of Carleton College. All right, we were talking about kids all over the world, not just in Somalia, including American kids, and how they don't really appreciate what they got, the ones that have it, and the ones that don't have it are not educated to know that you shouldn't throw plastic straws in the ocean.
Well, okay, that's kind of
a pretty general
tight summary there. But yeah, with the American kids, though, and this is I'll explain like what I was doing before is the American kids. It's not just that you kids are all so privileged and spoiled and blah blah blah, and you need to go help and you need to go donate to a food shelf. You need to go donate to charities and help the poor people in other parts of the world and things like that. It's not that that's not important, but that's, to me, it's really not addressing the root problem. And the root problem with Americans is just this isolation, just total isolation that they have no idea how they fit into the larger picture. And if they did know how that they fit into the larger picture, I think it would be very important to them. I think it would be very eye-opening and important for them to understand, not just like, those kids in Afghanistan, they're so poor and living in war conditions, but to say, wait a second, like, we're Americans. We actually craft policy, and it's not policy of, like, sending troops or who do we send aid to and things like that. That's, of course, involved in it, but I'm talking about this really, really big picture about how we all fit together and how understanding, the first thing is just understanding why do things happen the way they are happening. And if you can really, really understand, and I can say, you know, flat out right now that one of the problems with this 17 going on infinity war in Afghanistan is because Americans really have so little understanding of what is really going on out there. And you can bring in all the generals, line them up, I'll look them right in the eye and say it just like that. And I can go toe-to-toe with all of them that they really have such a low understanding of not just the culture, but being outside the blast walls, outside the wire in the field, to like, how are these people growing up? What is shaping them? What is their understanding and their awareness of the world around them? And they don't really know that. And I think most of them know they don't know that. And so they're making decisions based on not having just a very, very small, tiny view of what's really happening. So you can be sure that trying to remedy something that you don't understand is not going to be fixed. And you're probably going to make it worse. But in any case, so what we did, okay, so I'll tell a little, just little timeline of taking this idea, and it's this idea of mine also kind of came about the time we were adopting the kids, which wasn't the reason for it. You know, there was no rescuing children going on here. I just always had this view of like children around the world as they're so great, and they have so much, they have everything. They have all the potential to do amazing things. And the thought that there are these, you know, especially they are girls growing up in some pretty rough conditions, where they would end up on their natural trajectory, having, you know, no adult support, having no family, having, you know, living a hard scrabble existence.
For those that may have tuned in for the first time, mention the countries that you adopted the young ladies.
Ethiopia, India, and China. And again, this wasn't that, okay, we have to go and save them and bring them here to live happily ever after in America. But it was really this is me. This is this core mission, I guess, of my existence, is that these kids have all the answers within them, and they need to have the opportunity and the nurturing to be able to solve them and to shape this next generation that they're growing into. And I have no expectation for my kids that, yeah, you have to go move back to Ethiopia and go solve poverty and government corruption or something like that. That's not it. But I do raise them in a way that I want them to see this very, very, very big picture of the world. And by virtue of that, the problems that they will be able to understand what they are, they'll come up with new ideas in ways unique to them that they want to look at it. And it doesn't always have to be a like conscious, I am now problem solving, I am now doing, you know, this important work. When you are aware of things, whether it's just, why do we suddenly wear seatbelts and now people are not ordering straws with their drinks? I mean, you just become conscious of things, and then you start changing your behaviors, not consciously but unconsciously, moving towards something that is more productive and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so anyway, so I'd started this nonprofit called Children's Culture Connection, and it originally started where I'd kind of identified these places around the world where there were these, I guess they're just these invisible kids growing up in invisible spaces, but yet the what's happening to them without having their needs addressed, from education to health to self-esteem is part of it too. You can have a very well-fed young person, but if they don't have a good opinion of themselves and feel important, you're going to have problems no matter what. So I found these small nonprofits that, I mean, really small, grassroots things going on in all these different corners of the world, Kenya and India and Vietnam and Guatemala and Haiti and Afghanistan and Iraq and Peru, I think I said, I don't remember. And so I had this idea that if I could support them in some way, they would keep doing better work and more and just support them in these grassroots projects. And so what happened, the next thing that I did is I did a bunch of fundraising for them, and But it was became very important to me that I want to go see them. I want to go see on the ground what's really happening out there. Not to check up on them, just curious. And it's exciting when you are with a small nonprofit because you're just really riding around out in the field with the founder and the director, and you'll see a lot of stuff. They don't have fancy offices and bureaucracy, 100 layers of that before you can actually see who is being helped. And I went to Haiti, I went to Guatemala, I went to Peru, I went to Vietnam, I went to India, I went to Iraq, I went to Afghanistan, I went to all these places, and it just became so obvious that, yes, I can continue to try to raise money for them to support their programs and being their mouthpiece. That's what I am. I'm a marketer, getting other people to know about them too and build that up. But I kept thinking that until American kids understand, are part of this equation, everybody's just growing up in these little microcosms. And I feel like that this equation is very incomplete. And I don't mean that the American kids need to be part of the equation as like fundraising. And here you kids have so much and they have so little, so cough it up and have a cookie sale or something. But I want them to know it. I want them to be as close to what I saw. Because especially when you go out into the field, it's really life-changing. I mean, really, 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 to be holding AIDS orphan babies and they all have HIV, or to be in this slum in Haiti where these kids don't even have clothes. I mean, they are that poor. They eat dirt parts of their meal just to put something in their stomach. Or Afghanistan, to look at these people that are so affected by war. They are so traumatized, and they're poor, and they're eating dirt. I mean, it's so extreme that until American kids, I don't believe that they can do any good in helping shift into a new future if they don't have the closest feeling to what I had. And so instead of coming up with a pamphlet saying, okay, here's all these things that you need to know, it just sounds like a bunch of statistics, like, you know, 10 reasons why you shouldn't smoke. Okay, got it. You know, it's not meaningful. So what I started to do, because I love to write, is I would write these very kind of detailed bloggy narratives of my experience being with these children, and through the context of not just what's happening right in front of me, but connecting it with like what I learned, why it's happening, why I learned about like these kids in this refugee camp or IDP camp in Afghanistan, like why are they there and why isn't anybody helping them, and why and discovering that because they fled such a remote region that they're all illiterate, their grandparents are illiterate, they've been basically off the planet, so to speak, that for so many years of the longer war in Afghanistan, that, well, no wonder the Taliban can get these kids to do anything, because they don't even know the world is round yet. That's what I've learned. So kind of circling back to what I had to offer the American kids was basically, and I just tried to write them in as fun as a 13-year-old could read and grab onto, and make them kind of entertaining and a little bit dramatic and a little bit fun and a little bit personal, and then delivering this curriculum to classrooms. And that's what the nonprofit did, is they'd fund my trips to go off, and then they'd fund to compile the things, and we'd sort of distribute it to the classrooms. And it was a very Children's Culture Connection was a very grassroots nonprofit. As everybody knows, they'd see me coming and they're like, uh-oh, Dina's going to ask us for some money again. And anyway, it was a very, very effective thing, because a lot of kids would come afterward. They would hunt me down, which when you've got 13 and 14-year-old kids that are hunting down the curriculum writer of a social studies program to say this was one of the most meaningful things that has ever happened to me. My life has changed just by reading. Like, I felt like I was there with you, and my life isn't the same anymore, and I need to know what I should do about it next. And I was blown away at this. You know, so I'm sort of like, I'm assessing what's happening, what I'm seeing, where it fits with what I think my mission is about, and how I can start, you know, kind of, you know, working my way towards fulfilling that. But it was really unexpected when I had all these young people, and they were from other countries in some cases, in other parts of the country. They weren't local kids. They were all over the place. And they're just saying, this is so important. And I feel weirdly, some of them said that they felt weirdly cheated by society, that they're growing up. And you had some of these kids sitting here in your studio saying, like, we've been fed these lines about what this war in Afghanistan is about, and that it's like we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, and we're just, you know, keeping America strong. And then when they realize what's really happening, they're kind of angry about it because there's so much more to this story, and there's about 100 million hands out getting paid off by this whole thing. And
follow the money.
Yeah, there's corruption on so many levels, and most of it is on the American side. But you're not hearing that. You're just hearing like who we want people to believe. And that doesn't, and some of these kids were angry not just for the fact of, like, okay, we're not getting the full picture here, but some of them are related to veterans and people that have died over there, and they didn't even know why that they died. They didn't even, you know, and they've been kind of growing up with this very false picture of what sacrifice really looks like. Anyway, so this curriculum became like this very cool thing. However, one of the biggest stumbling blocks, it was just such a block that I was no longer interested in going further to try to, like, get over it. And I'm pretty hardworking and pretty resourceful and quite stubborn. And honestly, it's like, for all the people that supported the nonprofit, all the people on the board, and 10 years of really slogging away at, you know, trying to fundraise and manage the books and nonprofit, the fiduciary oversight, blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, it just became, and I talked about this on one of your shows one other time. It is just, to me, you know, sorry, I'm going to say it right here, it is such an inefficient business model, because when you're constantly depending on donations, well, you're at the mercy of everything. You're at the mercy of, you know, how people feel that day, and you're not really, it's not an economic model where you can make a product and you can market and advertise that product and you can, you know, charge for that product. And when you can do that and you can gauge what your sales are based on that instead of emotion, or it just so happens it's December 31st and somebody needs some tax write-offs and they're going to throw some money at you and things like that. We could never build a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan. We couldn't even build a 6-month plan. It was just this constant, like, hand-to-mouth existence. And it was very exhausting, because not only I can't tell if we're ever going to get there, I have opportunities that I can't capitalize on. We've got work in the field with all these kids. We've got, like, hundreds of kids in Afghanistan that are on board to, you know, create this new leadership program and anti-insurgency. But it's like, you know what? Sorry, kids. Our fundraiser didn't come together, and we had a blizzard and people didn't show up. So do nothing. I mean, like, it was really getting to this point of, like, this is worse than doing nothing at all. And of course, you know, when you can't pay people, you can only have volunteers come and go and come and go. And everybody was a volunteer, including myself. And it's like, you know, I'm getting too old. I'm getting too tired. It's just not worth it. And I feel very heartbroken that I can't, I get all these people, they're, even the American kids, these students, I get their hopes up to do something, but then I keep getting stuck in this, okay, we're out of money again. So,
but you just said something that was negative, and perhaps you want to explain yourself. You said it's not worth it. Is it? What do you mean when you say that?
Oh, yeah, that's a very, very negative thing, and I'm glad you clarified. It's not worth it that those kids aren't worth it, but it's not worth it to. Well, it's trying to, like, heat your house in the winter when all the windows are open. And, I mean, how many more shifts are you going to have to work to pay those bills for something that's just going right out the window?
And good analogy.
Yeah. So what we did is we ended up kind of taking what we had and moving it off to the gave the programs to other nonprofits. And I said, I would rather start all over again. I'm a writer. I'm a storyteller. I still have every access to all of these countries, all of these people. You know, they're my friends. So we started a new, Andy and I left CCC, and we started a new company, and it's just as simple as a for-profit company.
And we'll find out about that right after these important messages on the Wayne Eddy Affair. This is the one, 95.1 FM, KYMN, 1080 AM.
You're getting married. Congratulations. Now let's talk invitations. Should they be traditional, contemporary, or rustic? Do you need inspiration or looking for something outside the box? From your save the date to your thank you and everything in between, By All Means Graphics will help you define your style to fit the tone of your wedding. From design to can you print what someone made for me, we're here to help. By All Means Graphics is located in downtown Northfield at 17 Bridge Square. Stop on in to meet with one of our team members or call us at 507-663-7937 to set up an appointment. You can also find us online at byallmeansgraphics.com.
Hi, I'm Pam Fikencher, Senior Pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church in Northfield. We invite you to join us for beautiful, song-filled worship every Sunday at 8:30 and 10:45 a.m. We are located at 500 3rd Street West in Northfield. If you can't join us in person, you can listen to our broadcast at 8:30 a.m. every Sunday on KYMN Radio, 1080 a.m., or live online at kymnradio.net. Go to stjohnsnorthfield.org to see our full calendar of events. We hope to see you soon.
Beat It, Michael Jackson, same red leather jacket.
From what album?
Thriller?
I don't know.
Nah, I don't know. I don't care.
What are you doing?
I'm finally breaking down and eating one of these glazed donuts.
I'll let her chew that up.
Yep.
In the meantime, we'll be right back with her. But, Michael Jackson from 1983, the number 8 song in all of 1983. So beat it. Well, it looks like you got a half a donut down. I would have had the whole thing down, but...
how long have I been here? An hour and 25 minutes? I was late. I was an hour and 15 minutes. And I'm staring at this box of glazed donuts for National Be Kind to People.
Yeah.
Pay It Forward Week or something like that. And I'm not feeling guilty about that cinnamon roll from Monday. But I'm still kind of trying to exercise it off. And now here I am with a whole box.
Are you seriously, you have to work to maintain your... what looks like to be normal weight?
Well, sure. Everybody does, don't they?
I have that pot belly, though. And I was really happy to hear somewhere. But I am, my weight, when you go to the doctor, they go, oh, you know, that's good. And that's right around where you should be at your height. And but I have a pot belly, and guys... get pot bellies. I mean, that's it, period, amen. There are few exceptions, okay? The six-pack guys, but older gentlemen, they get pot bellies.
Yeah.
And the thing that I like to see is a guy, an older guy, who wears a pair of pants, not with suspenders, but with a belt, but he tightens the belt at the top of his pot belly instead of the bottom of the pot belly.
And you like that because...
Well, it's more comfortable.
Yeah. But it's more comfortable for people around. We're not worried that his pants are going to fall off.
Yeah. I like to... Danny Freeman and I used to do little old men tricks, you know, pull our pants way up to under our underarms and then take those little baby woggly steps and bend over and tell jokes about old people. don't do that anymore. Danny passed away, and I just don't do that anymore. You know, we talk about so many different things when we get together and chit-chat. I always feel they're interesting, but I specifically wanted to know more about the Somali situation, and I want to give you an idea. I may have told you the story, but I had a paper out in Indianapolis, Broad Ripple, and the end of my route went to the White River, and it would be five times wider than the Cannon River. And down, you went up a hill, and then you went down, and they had where the garbage trucks dumped their garbage. You've seen scenes where they are looking for a body, for example, mm-hmm. and they have, now they stack them and number them, and you can go. But they just did it, and there were kids from the levee, that's what we call it, the levee, that were going through that garbage thing.
Looking for things looking they for, can sell or recycle?
Well, yeah. Recycling wasn't in the picture.
But I mean recycling like cans that they could go maybe get some money
for.
Oh,
yeah, Coke bottles, stuff like that. And the people down there had their houses on stilts because the river would rise. And, you know, one place would just be a shack. The other one was like a nice-looking, single-wide motor home, a mobile home, but on sticks. And I, as a kid, was delivering newspapers because I wanted to earn money, and I lived just a little bit south of there and in a dump, frankly, but not like where you could smell the garbage and see all those pigeons or whatever they were. So I had an experience of going into poverty-stricken neighborhoods under those conditions. So now I want to know, you go to Somali, I think of Tom Hanks, and I think of answering the telephone and saying no, and you go there to educate children and let them know there's a bigger, greater world out there.
Well, part of my trips are to educate myself on what that bigger world is, because your story is a perfect example. Until you, if you hadn't rode your bike down to that, if you hadn't smelled the garbage and really seen it and really seen what people were doing there, you not only wouldn't have known it existed, you wouldn't have really believed it existed. And if somebody said, hey, you know what, here's what's happening, you'd be like, really? Oh, well, weird or sad, or I can't make any connection to it. It's just, it's almost like it didn't happen. So I wanted to see, I mean, and Afghanistan was one of the big ones, obviously. It's like, okay, everybody knows Haiti, and many people have been to Guatemala, and many people have gone to India. These aren't like new things, but this Afghanistan thing, I might as well have been going to Mars. And it's interesting because it's not like you can't get there. People live there. It's in the minds and the consciousness of Americans and most Westerners, I think, it's not even a place anymore. It's not even a culture. It's not a civilization. It's just this battleground. And
all mountains and dirt.
And that's it. You know, I mean, because that's, again, it's that lens of what we've seen and what we know. So I wanted to go there because I really wanted to just like experience this. And I don't mean, I'm not a danger lover, but I knew people that lived there, Afghan people. Like, and I'd say, well, what do you do all day? Just hide in a bunker or something? And they're telling me enough that I have this, like this little pinhole of a look into this, that there's a civilization there and people do things and there's families and they have weddings and they do fun things and they celebrate things. So I went there, and anyway, that was my purpose of going there is, and yes, I did see a lot of hardcore stuff, but I also saw the larger picture that these people really have something that's a great history that they're trying to get back again. And they, you know, they're out flying kites in the park. They're, you know what I mean? Like when the crap's not going down, it's just a day of celebrating being alive and, you know, whatever. Okay. So that's my reason for first of going there. Now, I'm not on a hunt for children. I want to absorb all of this. And then I'll see what opportunities present themselves. Is there something that I can do? Who's working out there? Who's got something going on in not such a triage manner, but something like really systemic that's changing, like helping empower these young people. And if I can find that, I'll figure out how I can support that. So anyway, now, it's a couple of summers ago. We're going to Somalia. A couple of summers ago, and I was, it was something on my news feed. I was kind of scrolling through. I'm reading the news all the time. And I, there was some little article about the president of Somaliland was wanting to, or president of Somalia was wanting to increase their tourism business and really like promote tourism to Somalia for, you know, to why countries love it. Tourism money supports the economy, gets a lot of, you know, less developed and developing countries on their feet because it's bringing in foreign money and it's, you know, providing jobs and things like that. So tourism is a great beginning. And I thought to myself, I swiped past it really quickly and I thought I must have hallucinated that. The president of Somalia wants people to go there. You mean the place with the pirates, the place with the terrorists, the place with the famine, the place that we're sending the Feed My Starving Children boxes to, and everybody's coming here. There's more Somalis in Minnesota than anywhere outside of Somalia. So it's like, why would we go there? And I just thought that was so bizarre. Not even ironic, just bizarre. And so I thought, wait a second, let me go back again. I got to make sure I read this. Because if this was a true thing, I kind of, you know, hats off, man. Like, you know, way to look at the glasses half full. Like, you know, let's welcome people in and see if they come. And anyway, it turned out that the article was not about Somalia. It was about Somaliland and the president of Somaliland. And this is where my arrogance had gotten the best of me. I'm like, that's not a place. And not that I think I know everything, but, you know, you get a certain arrogance when you've traveled enough times, and especially to these places that nobody goes and nobody knows about. And I'm a geography buff, so I'm like, what is Somaliland? And so I'm quickly, like, Google searching it. And it turns out, I mean, I'm not completely guilty for not knowing this, but it is its own country. And I'll give you the 15-second version of history lesson here. The Horn of Africa, you know, that the horn where it kind of juts out towards Saudi Arabia. And Somalia, the country, kind of wraps around. It's like a numeral 7 almost. And I thought all of that was Somalia because, you know what, on every map that you'll ever see, that's all Somalia. But in 1991... they broke away. It was part of the Civil War. It's always complicated. Civil War means complicated. But they broke away, and they were two different cultures, okay? All right, I'm going to extend this to a 30-second history lesson.
Don't worry about
during the, well, because I want to get to the fun part about when I went there. During
there's always another time.
Okay, colonization of Africa. You know, what wasn't colonized?
French and English.
Well, French, English, Belgians, oh, yeah. Italians.
Yeah.
Come on. Like
Germany.
Germany was in there. Yeah. I mean, if you were a European and you weren't hacking up Africa for your own claims, you weren't a European. You know what I mean? Like, that's what was going on. So the Somalia, that Horn of Africa, was very desirable because mostly of the ports, you know, and having that access to the Middle East and India and, you know, seas and channels and canals. Stuff.
You're talking about the west side.
The east side. Yeah.
The Gold Coast, if you want to call it that.
Kind of, you know, but it's really that's like that Horn of Africa where, like, you have Saudi Arabia just across and Yemen and Oman and India's over here and the spice trade and all of this activity that's going through here. And so Somalia, that number 7 was actually carved up into three parts. The Italians took the lower east part, the British took this kind of central northwesty, and then the French took the far western corner. Okay, so over, you know, about 100 years or so of colonization, you know, these cultures are separated from one another, and they have this heavy influence of different European cultures. And the Italians and the British and the French, I mean, these are very different cultures and different people, and they're kind of warring amongst themselves to a certain extent in Italy, especially now when you're getting into the World War II. And you know what I mean? Like, okay, so what was really a very important lesson for me is how the identity of the Somalis themselves as kind of a people got really just jammed up, okay, because of all of these outside forces. And
did that include missionaries? as independent of the governments of the countries?
You know, from my study, I don't think missionaries were as involved there.
Okay.
But it was, you know, and the governments there, they weren't doing a full-on colonization like some places. They didn't have a lot of things that they wanted to extract from them. And they kind of made more like just partnerships with the government. And that if the government lets them do whatever they want, they'll get money. And there's lots of...
You can tighten that up, you know.
Sorry.
You just...
My head's too small. Earphones are...
You more. Have a big head. we're talking about her earphones.
Yeah. So
keep falling
so
off.
Anyway, so what happened is after the colonists, occupiers, whatever you want to call them, after the British and the Europeans left, Somalia, they reunified very quickly, and almost within months from their independence, they all reunified as one nation. But, you know, that you're not just reunifying the same people anymore. They have different ideas and they have different influences.
Languages?
Somewhat the languages, because, yeah, a lot of people were speaking English here and a lot of people were speaking Italian now here. But they have different alliances and allegiances and just different concepts. And the Somalia part, I mean, the Italian influence was kind of more in that closer to fascism, you know, and so there's arguments made that part of the reason that there is such a stricter government is from the legacy of that, and that's where the terror groups are working out of, and the piracy and that, whereas Somaliland, that was a British protectorate, and there were, you know, so, anyway, okay, so let me just jump back to, so I'm now going, okay, so they, what happened is Somaliland, they left. They're like, we're out of here. The civil war isn't working, and we're redrawing that line again. It's still a shaky line. It's a murky line. But they said, we are our own country. See you later. They set up their own government. They have their own parliament and elections, their democracy. They have their own currency. They have police force, military. They're a country, except they're not internationally recognized yet. And this goes back to politics. Okay. And so... But they're really, it's really interesting to me. This is what's very phenomenal about what's happened, is that despite all of the crazy stuff that has happened over the last 150 years on the African continent, and the fact that they were part of their own civil war, they not only broke off but they pulled it together. And they've pulled it together for over 25 years, or 27 years now that they've been on their own independent, but without international recognition. There is no banking. They're not connected to money in the rest of the world. And so what it does is it really limits what you can do. So I was so curious about seeing it for myself. Like, and it's also used oftentimes as a model for other African nations that are, you know, they're all trying to get it together. But it's a very hard thing to do. And, you know, there's so much corruption and there's so much tribalism and there's so much, you know, just distrust and... blah, blah, blah. Okay, I don't want to go on too much to these segues.
We'll segue into Somaliland.
Let's segue into my trip there and yep. Who those kids are that I got to know.
Okay, and once again, explain briefly, and we'll take a break. Somaliland, same thing that I thought when I saw that. Is that for real?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, some people would look and think, like maybe I even did, is that like Disneyland? So, what is the population of Somaliland? Are we talking millions, or are we talking?
You know, we should Google it. It's not very high. It's probably in several million.
Well, you Google
it. I'm going to Google it.
I'll take a break here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. You're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of downtown Northfield, Minnesota. 1080 on your AM dial for over 50 years, and now 95.1 FM, The One.
Are you looking for spacious senior living in Northfield? Feel at home at Northfield Retirement Communities, Northwood Pines. Available for individuals and couples, this assisted living combines the privacy of one-bedroom plus den apartments with family-style meals and care available around the clock. Visit us online at northfieldretirement.org or call us today at 664-3466. Northfield Retirement Community. Innovation. Choice. Tradition.
Monster Jam.
Where it's winner takes all. No guts, no glory. Witness the best of the best. See Gravedigger, Max D, Megalodon, and more of your favorite Monster Jam trucks. This is Monster Jam. Presented by official partners America's Best Contacts and Eyeglasses, BKT Tires, and Metro by T-Mobile. Tickets on sale now. Experience adrenaline-charged family entertainment. Lock in your seats today at MonsterJam.com. Coming to U.S. Bank Stadium February 16th.
We're back live and in color on KYMN Radio. It's bright and sunny in the studio here. And we are visiting with a woman by the name of Dina Fessler. And Dina just took a mouthful of donuts, and I was going to say, name this tune as you chew.
Flashdance?
Yeah.
What a feeling. Irene Cara? Yeah.
100%. You want to swallow, or should I keep playing this for a minute? Nope, there goes the coffee.
Can you hear my smacking?
Snacking. Snacking is good.
In a world made of steel, made of stone.
Here's the part I like. Is that the way the Somalians dance?
Yeah, I'm doing the dab.
The what?
The dab.
D-A-B?
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
It's the not so new. Well, you invite your Viking players back on and...
Okay,
tell them,
yeah.
I don't know what a dab.
Do a
is.
Dab for me. The only thing I think of is Brill Cream, a little dab will do ya. Brill Cream, you look so debonair.
No,
remember
I dab
commercial?
In front of my kids in public, and they
dab is waving your arms.
It's kind of like a bump. It's kind of like a movement.
Oh, yeah, it's like Bolt, the guy that is the quickest man in the world.
Usain Bolt or Usain or
something
Bolt. Yeah.
And it went.
Does he do that?
Yeah. When he had. Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool. So, okay, population of Somalia in the 2013 is the thing that popped up, and it was 4.5 million.
Oh,
so you know,
bigger
it's not,
than you thought.
It's not tiny, but it's not, you know, big. So anyway, okay, now that I've got this whole new picture in my mind, and they said it's very it's got some like cool things that tourists would see. Because that's my next question, is like, what's there? You know, is it a bunch of, you know, just sand and thorn brush? Again, I have these various honest stereotypes in my head. And it says they've got beaches because they got a lot of coast, and they've got the most historic thing is these caves. There's cave art, and it's like some of the oldest cave art, like from the Stone Age.
Yeah.
And most Stone Age cave art doesn't last for that many thousands of years. And it's really some impressive stuff. But again, because nobody knows about it, to go there, it's like seeing the pyramids with no lines outside because nobody knows Egypt exists or something like that. So. And they said it's a very peaceful place, and you'll have your own tour guide. They'll take care of you like just like a baby. You'll be just so protected. They do make you have an armed guard traveling with you everywhere you go, which doesn't make me feel safe in a strange way to have this assault rifle carrying soldier.
Do they have a downtown?
Yeah, they do. I mean, and it's third world. It's not. I mean, but they've got some
pavement.
Sometimes, you know, I mean, it's a lot of very
elephants,
rustic camels. Camels are everywhere, which was really cool to see. And they are camel herders, nomads. And anyway, I learned so much about this culture, and I really enjoyed it. The hotel that I stayed at was like a 4 or 5 star hotel. It had a pool, had Wi-Fi, had, you know, whatever I need. And it was great. I really liked it. But anyway, here was the coolest thing, is I really just went there to just immerse myself in this with this open mind, and I want to learn. And, you know, we'd meet people along the way, or our driver, and we'd interview them, and we'd be like, okay, like, tell me your story. Tell me, you know, what do you think the Civil War thing is about, or where is your
English?
Yeah, of course, the ones that speak English. And you know,
well, wouldn't they have been the more successful and not representative of the general population?
Well, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's people that if they're educated, they're not representing everybody, but they're still, I think, able to speak. They're aware of the larger connectedness, you know. And for example, one of the interviews that we did, he was a guy, we just met him at a coffee shop, and he was kind of curious because there aren't a lot of foreigners around, and he was wondering what we were up to. And we just told him. And he was born in Kenya. I mean, a lot of them are born outside the country because of the Civil War. And I mean, it's really disrupted. It's just, it really just reconfigures everybody's place in every way you could possibly define that. And so he came from Kenya, but then his family moved back to the Hargeisa region of Somaliland after they broke away because it was peaceful enough to go back there. But there is, you know, Somalis that are in Ethiopia, and there's Somalis that are in Minnesota, and there's Somalis that are all over the place. So anyway, but he really helped just give like an educated person's explanation of everything, and pretty much everything that I told you, which I'd researched, but hearing it from a person. And he works in the cement industry or something like that. I don't remember exactly what he does. You know, but people have jobs.
Now,
and
are Somalis recognizable about their deep color?
Well, Somalis have a look. You know, I can tell an Ethiopian. Mm-hmm. When I'm with an Ethiopian, I can tell a Somali for the most part. But I can tell a Japanese person from a Korean, from a Chinese person. You know, I mean, if you spend enough time, you can start to make some distinctions. And
well, I remember a black comedian one time saying, "Do you know so and so?" And he says, "Well, I don't know." He said, "Well." He says, to me, they all look alike. White people all look alike.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of go, what?
And do you want to know what? I totally get that. When I am gone out of country for a while, I remember when I lived in China. I lived in China for years. And when I would come back to Minnesota, I felt like I knew everybody. Because they all look alike, and they all look familiar, and they all look like somebody. And I remember I was at Southdale shopping one day, and it was very disconcerting because I'm just sort of like think of like if somebody that you knew just was walking by, and you're like, oh look who it is. And I was doing that all day long, and I thought, and they all start to look alike when you don't have that around you all the time. So, anyways, it's not as
well,
politically incorrect to say
you,
that in some cases,
okay.
I think.
Let me tell you where I think I am, and that is you're in this 4 or 5 star hotel, mm-hmm. with a swimming pool and AK-47 protection, and it sounds like, wow, what a nice family vacation or individual vacation. But you want to explore the culture. Did you reach out, and did you, am I moving ahead too far in the story, that you could do something that was beneficial to mankind or
well, okay, yeah, that's where I'm headed. It's like that wasn't my main purpose, because I and really that is what I like to make really, really clear, is that I'm not trying to be, and I've never really tried to be, this do-gooder where I'm just running around trying to like find people to help. I'm running around trying to find people to understand and just to understand not just what one story is, but when you go there, you take in a larger story, and you get a larger picture of things. And then, you know, what happens. That's the fun of a great adventure. So while I was out there, and I have Wi-Fi in my hotel, and now I know that I'm staying in the 0.01%. I know I'm in a poor, war-torn country. I got that. Same in Afghanistan. You know, I get that where I am and the things that I'm doing aren't the norm. But at the same time, you have to take care of yourself. I mean, you have to, like, the Somaliland president isn't going to be getting his tourism business launched if anything happens, because I'm in areas that are maybe, you know, you're dealing with people that are very, very poor. And here comes one foreign tourist walking by, and like, get pickpocketed in New York. You can get pickpocketed in St. Paul. You can be, you know what I mean? Like wherever somebody looks like they have something, and you have people that are hungry, you know, this is part of life. You must be, you know, thinking ahead. So anyway, yes. I mean, and also it's mandatory too. The government says you have to have this guard with you because they don't want anybody messing with you. They want to protect this buddy.
Do you tip them?
You know, it was funny because they didn't expect it. After we were done, had this guide for several days, and we gave him a tip, and he just looked like, oh my gosh, like, what are you doing? And we said, and then I'm like, uh-oh, I don't know if this is a cultural offense. Some places it is. And
I like those places.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it is. But we'd spent, you know, after 5 days, 4 days, you know, with your guide, who's your babysitter at all times. And he's a really sweet guy. And he told us about his family.
Where did he sleep?
In his home, you know, and he'd just come pick us up in the morning. And anyway, we said, this is for your family. Give it to your kids. And
when I said, I'd like that, that doesn't mean I don't like tipping. I was just trying to be humorous.
No, but you know what? There are some cultures. Like, go to Japan. It's such a relief. They don't tip. And so you don't ever have to think about it. You just, you don't have to, like, am I offending? Am I overdoing it? Am I, you know.
This is a personal question, and you can answer it. You were generating, if you were generating income from your trips abroad, and let's go to Somaliland, that still sounds funny, and you had that opportunity, would you be able to write that off on your taxes, or was it more personal?
Well, okay. I mean, for that particular trip, it wasn't funded by me. We have an investor that invested in the GSD, the Global Student Dynamic, or Get Stuff Done.
Okay.
GSD Network is the name of my new company.
Okay.
There is no more Children's Culture Connection. It's GSD. And actually, it was a former donor from CCC where we were having a discussion, and I was talking about my frustration with the business model and how you just can keep rowing and you never really get very far. And he said, I totally support the idea of this as a nonprofit. It should have been a for-profit. And he said, if you want an investor, I'm in. And it was just like instantaneous. He's like, I've seen your work. I know how you operate. And so that was actually a funded trip to get things launched. And so it's not really a write-off. It's a business expense.
But that's what I mean.
Yeah,
and
right.
Because you're doing reporting on the blog.
It was a research trip, and then we knew that we would turn it into even if we didn't have kids to work with out there, I was going to turn this into a curriculum. This is just research to, you know, write a curriculum off of. So this is part of our business formula, and we sell curriculum. So, but while we were there, I'm just getting to the fun part, and you'll probably want to have me back again to finish this story because it gets really good.
Well, I'd rather just take a break right now and come back.
Cut me off, kick me out right now.
No. You can stay till 11:07.
But I can't tell the story in 7 minutes.
Well, save it.
Okay. Do we have a cliffhanger?
We have
a cliffhanger.
Well, we'll hear it in a minute, but you're always welcome. You're very informative.
Okay.
You got great tales to tell.
These are good ones.
And you're a good conversationalist, and I'm a good listener.
And I like cinnamon rolls and donuts.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Be her hero this Valentine's Day with a gift from Russell Stover Chocolates. They specialize in fresh strawberries, hand-dipped in luscious chocolate, and packaged in beautiful red heart boxes. Russell Stover chocolate-covered strawberries are the most romantic Valentine's Day gift you can give. At Russell Stover, there are special gifts for every budget. Many gifts are buy two, get one free. Two for her, one for you. Choose Russell Stover chocolates.
A home is probably the biggest purchase you'll ever make, and you want to make sure everything goes smoothly. Call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell. I not only offer homeowners insurance to protect your investment, but I can help with home loans too. No wonder more homeowners trust State Farm than any other insurance company. For information, call me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell at 645-4545. Providing insurance and financial services, loans are offered through State Farm Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Priya, and I'm part of the amazing community at CrossFit Scopos. I found myself getting bored with my usual gym routine. That's when I found CrossFit Scopos, a functional group fitness methodology dedicated to making you move better. You'll never be bored with a new workout every day planned by one of our fantastic coaches. CrossFit Scopos is for everybody. We don't throw tires. This community is inclusive and fun, and the workouts are making me stronger. I love this gym, and I guarantee you will too. Stop by anytime. We're located in Dundas off Highway 3 next to Menards.
Ladies and gentlemen, the number one tune in all of 1983. Name that tune, woman.
Every Breath You Take by... Is it Sting or The Police?
Both.
He was not independent, right? No, it was The Police. Okay.
The Police.
Every bond
And that was the number one tune in all of 1983. How many years ago is that? There's a six there.
Yeah.
46 years? No, 36 years ago. Yeah. Boy, time flies, doesn't it?
It's been a good ride. 36
years
for me.
Ago, you were what, four, seven?
36. Well, it was 83. I was in college. But thanks again.
Which one? Did you ever go, like, to the U?
I went to the U of M. That's right. I don't know why I had to think about that for a second.
Well, because you were thinking about fashion.
Right. Yeah. U of M, Sky Uma, rah, rah, rah.
Do you get letters from them all the time asking for money?
I get emails from them all the time.
Yeah. You ever throw something out?
Nope.
Isn't it amazing how they can go out and raise millions of dollars from their successful grants?
Yeah. And they gotta, you know. I mean, look at Carlton. Look at what these people throw in for their donations, you know.
You know, one of the things that I had a... In my lifetime, I had a wonderful opportunity, is the Wilder Foundation. Have you ever heard of that?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay. Well, my mother took me to the Wilder, funded my health care through the Wilder Foundation when I was young.
Okay.
And I end up playing cribbage with the late Casey Jarko, who was writing a book about the Wilders. And so I made a donation to the radio broadcast school that I went to.
Okay.
Because I was taken care of by those people.
Okay.
I won. The way you'd say it in society is, oh, yeah, I got a scholarship.
Right. Well, you know, and I think that's really cool. Like, when people have a personal connection, I mean, the U of M changed my life. They gave me my degree. They launched me. My $10 checks aren't going to get them too far. I'm not really who they want.
I got a letter from...
they want some big money.
The class of 1955, St. Matthew's Catholic Grade School in St. Paul,
mm-hmm.
and I live right behind it. And they had a class reunion one time for grade school, and I went to it, and I thought that was nice, and put your name, address, email... Well, now I get literature from them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I send them money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sister Clarissa. I'll never forget her.
My extra money goes to programming, the stuff that I do.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, everybody's got to raise money. I respect how everybody's got to keep their business afloat.
Well, that interesting story, you wanted to give a tease, and you'll come back someday, and we're talking about Somaliland.
Somaliland, mm-hmm. and this group of kids that I met, and it's a really interesting thing that's going on. It's like finding, not the fountain of youth, I'm thinking about just something in the last place on earth, which I would call Somaliland the last place on earth, because not only is it like out in a place that has enough problems, but nobody even knows it's there. So nobody's even going to help you if you cry for help because they don't know you're there. But there is this educational incubator that is producing stuff that is so remarkable. And some of the world's, like, the next Einsteins and Bill Gateses and like real Elon Musk-y types are coming out of this school in the middle of Somaliland.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do.
And people need to tune in again when we talk about it.
Okay, and we'll do that in the future.
Yeah.
All right. I want to say thank you again for coming in this morning and yesterday morning. I always
enjoy. No, actually, was it yesterday?
I don't know. What was yesterday?
Monday. It's all a blur. I think it was here on Monday.
Okay, well.
I just don't want the person here yesterday
yes,
to feel bad.
Yes, you were Monday.
Okay.
The person that was here yesterday was me because I got a cancellation because of the snowfall.
Oh, right.
But I made it in. I ended up in the ditch, but I made it in.
You can entertain anybody along for 2 hours, right?
Well, yeah, as long as they have stuff like this. Well, thank you, Dina Fessler.
My pleasure.
You're listening to The One, 95.1 FM, and, of course, The One, 1080 is on the menu here, at 1080 Radio, KYMN-FM. I will see you tomorrow. I'm going to be introducing a woman who has just published a book, and it's about her grandfather being held prisoner in Dachau during the Hitler regime. So that's what's coming up tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Please tune in. And at this point, I'm going to turn things over to other areas of the broadcast day for the one, 95.1. You know, the one that's locally owned.
Locally owned, independently programmed, 95.1. The one.